First of all, I just want to thank you for tuning in. It's very late, especially on the East Coast. So thank you for joining me. I'm going to go ahead on and click here to who am I. I have been thinking about these issues for a very long time. I consider my identity as a critical scholar, but also a pedagogue, but also an activist in these issues. I spent 12 years in public schools, teaching both teaching mathematics, but also serving as a math coach to teachers in both Seattle Public Schools and Federal Way Public Schools. Prior to coming to Vanderbilt, I spent 5 years at the University of Denver. So when I finished my PhD in 2011, Denver was my first tenure track position. And that was a really wonderful place to begin to sort of start my career and to think about these broader equity issues around students of color, girls of color in particular, and mathematics. My research really aims to try to understand Black girls and women's experiences in mathematics in particular. I care about trying to understand how they develop or not what we understand as robust or productive math identities in these spaces. I also care about their racial and gender identities and other identities that they deem are part of their full personhood and humanity. I also think about the ways in which white supremacy and white normativity and whiteness work in actually shaping, you know, Black girls and women's experiences in these math spaces. And when I say math spaces, I'm not just talking about the traditional classroom. I'm also talking about, you know, outside of the classroom, so in informal spaces. Dr. Erica Walker at TC College has a beautiful definition of spaces, and essentially it's any place in which, you know, math knowledge is being engaged in or math ideas. So wherever that is happening, those are the kinds of spaces, you know, that I'm interested in. My work uses intersectionality, which is a framework, an analytic framework, but also a methodology for trying to understand these issues. There are really two sort of levels, if you want to think about at least Kimberly Crenshaw's original articulation of intersectionality. So on the one hand, we talk about and describe, you know, Black women and girls' different identities. But we also want to get at the levels of structures. So things such as tracking, things such as differentiated math instruction at like those lower level courses, all different kinds of systems and structures that can impede Black women and girls, you know, robust opportunities to be able to view themselves as, you know, math learners. And so overall, all of this work that I, you know, toil and work on is really to try to complicate the grand narrative. And we all know that the narrative about Black girls and women in terms of math achievement is that they are at the bottom. And so my work is really trying to unpack to say, okay, if they are at the bottom, we need to understand why. And it's beyond just they, you know, don't have, you know, good preparation. You know, it's beyond more than just they don't get into the right courses. There's a lot of other factors that come into play. So I plan to stop and sort of pause and ask people to ask questions. And if I will try to answer some of those, depending upon how many comes through. So I'm going to stop and pause for a second and see if there are any questions so far. Okay. I don't think I see any questions in the chat box. And then I'm relying on you, Sheila, to help me. Okay. So, Sheila?
No, you're good. I was going to just say to Brian asked a question about, just go ahead and post if you have any questions right in the chat. Feature right on Big Maker.
Great. So I had a slide here because it's important to me as a engager, presenter, to know who my audience is. And I appreciate you guys engaging me and going to the Padlet. So I can see that we have a range of people. We have a librarian. We have some college level professors. We've got some teachers, pre-service teachers, or folks that teach pre-service teachers, excuse me. We've got some doc students. And so there's a variety of people here. We've got a fifth grade math teacher. And so I'm hoping that by the end of the presentation, all of you will be able to take something away from this presentation that is, you know, meaningful for you. Perhaps it's causing you to think differently. Perhaps it's asking you to ask more questions, whether you are a, you know, a fifth grade teacher or a university faculty member or wherever you find yourself. I hope that this presentation causes you to think a little bit more. So these are some of the things that I have learned from my own empirical research, as well as the literature about Black girls. So let me make this full. Black girls are probably some of the most misunderstood young people that have been stereotyped, really from a legacy of slavery. Some of you probably recognize some of these stereotyped categories. So for example, there's this idea of being loud, Black girls being loud, being aggressive, being very unfeminine. That is really associated with this notion of the sapphire. The Jezebel is, you know, the Black girl is hypersexualized or she's very seductive. And then the mammy notion is sort of this very nurturing. I'm sure you've seen like Aunt Jemima pictures from, you know, back during the times of, you know, slavery. And so these stereotypes, while they are super old and come from slavery, there are still remnants of these different stereotypes that come out today in our math classrooms, you know, in 2017. So the fact that they're misunderstood and stereotyped is a really important idea that I think math teachers need to think about. Black girls also have different ways of embodying their femininities, which are very different oftentimes from their white peers. And what generally happens is that a lot of them are usually judged by those white feminine standards. So there are two studies that I strongly encourage you to read. One is called Girlhood Interrupted, which was a recent study that the Georgetown Law School put out. And essentially what that report suggested, while they also discussed these stereotypes, you know, they asked, like, I think it was almost 1,000 just regular Americans questions about Black girls. And so the bottom line was that Americans viewed Black girls as more adult-like. And so this report introduces a concept called adultification. And they break down the age groups and the ages that that they saw the highest level of adulthood began at the precious age of 5 and sort of heightened at the age of, I think it was 14. And so these are, and the other report is called Black Girls Matter. And that was put out by the African-American Forum. So those are two studies where you would really get a good sense of how Black girls overall are sort of viewed in society as well as, you know, in schools. Push Out by Monique Morris is another great book that I would encourage you to read where you can learn a lot more about, you know, how Black girls are experiencing society. Black girls, the other thing that I want to say, if you don't know about the Spring Valley case, that's another case that I would encourage you to read. Basically, a young Black girl was dragged on the floor. She was in her Algebra 1 class when this happened. And so that's a case that I would encourage you to read and, you know, perhaps talk with other folks that care about these things. Black girls need to integrate the social and academic while learning mathematics. This is something that I've noticed in a few studies that it's not necessarily about completely being quiet. Just because you're quiet does not mean that you are learning. But there's this idea that Black girls like to engage with both the teacher as well as both and her peers as well. And we noticed this in a study, a paper that I'm actually writing up now, that these Black girls talked about how, you know, we love being able to tell jokes, but, you know, don't get it twisted. You know, we get our math work done, but we like to be able to be silly every now and then and be more relaxed. Those are some of the things that they were saying. Black girls know when they're wrong and know how to hold themselves accountable. So this was another observation that we noticed in that same study. They would say things like, you know I have a low B in this, you know, in this class. I know what I need to do in order to raise, you know, in order to raise that level grade to a better grade. And so they talked about how they knew what their potential was and they knew how to, you know, set goals, I guess, to make them have higher grades in their math classes. Black girls thrive off of authenticity with their math teachers. It is important for Black girls to see their math teachers as someone who they can go to, both on the personal level, but also on the academic level. And this is, again, something that I've seen in the literature as well as my own work, that building and having authentic relationships is something that can really help a Black girl see herself in a math classroom as a member of this community, and being able to, you know, go off the cuff, taking up, you know, what do they call it, a rabbit hole, go down a rabbit hole or whatever, to come up to the math teacher, tell a story or whatever, being able to make that connection is something that we're kind of seeing is also really important. And this last bullet point talks about how Black girls enjoy seeing math teachers that look like them. We have seen this a lot in the literature, that same race is important for students to see role models. At the same time, we know that there are a lot of bad math teachers that are African American. So it's not, a requirement, and it's not a guarantee that that will actually happen. I think what we're looking for is, how do we develop math teachers, first of all, that understand critical issues around race and gender and class and historical context around, you know, different Black girls in this country and, you know, their status as a member of a larger group of people that have, you know, struggled from day one here in the United States. So how do we create caring and what I call woke math teachers that are willing to, you know, go the extra mile in terms of being able to see their Black girls as great, as genius, as smart, emerging mathematicians, emerging scientists, you know, in their classrooms. So I'm going to stop and pause and see if there are questions about these different ideas. Okay.
So there was one question about the stereotypes, and do you think that's a spillover from the experience during slavery?
Absolutely. We, and you know, social media and what we see on TV, those things perpetuate, if you will, those age-old stereotypes that are very difficult to disrupt and dismantle, to get rid of, because, you know, we're constantly comparing Black girls to white girls. And, you know, it's just a fact that we do it as a society because whiteness has been utilized as sort of the standard, right? And so it's very, very difficult to get rid of or, like I said, dismantle stereotypes.
And then I think you're getting here, but there was another question about if there's specific classroom strategies to address some of the things that you mentioned in the bullets.
You know, the difficult thing about this work is that it's internal work and it's long-term work. So, you know, when I think about strategies, to me, that feels like, you know, what can I do tomorrow? And this is asking, this is challenging us as a community of math teachers to go a little bit deeper beyond that, because it's not necessarily about, you know, what can I do tomorrow, but it really is about how do I unpack, you know, these different issues so that I can better understand who my Black girls are in my class. And then, you know, how do I take that and also still teach them very high level, rigorous mathematics in a way that they view themselves, you know, see themselves and are becoming to understand themselves as mathematicians, math learners, whatever word you want to use. Sheila, was there another one?
Because there is another one. I'm going to read exactly what it says so I don't accidentally paraphrase. How do we also come to appreciate the ordinariness of Black girls? Is there a danger of in positioning Black girls as singularly brilliant and full of magic?
Is there a danger of full of magic?
And how do we sell? I think it's about like, how can we also come to appreciate the ordinariness? And is there a danger in saying Black girls are full of magic?
Yeah, you know, I have actually critiqued the Black girl magic hashtag. On the one hand, it's about, okay, celebrating the full humanity of Black girls and all what that looks like. So if it's ordinary, if it's extraordinary, if it whatever it is, I see what that, you know, sort of social movement tries to do. At the same time, it's sort of puts us on this level that, you know, we are completely unbreakable, that we don't hurt, that Black girls don't experience pain, that they are, quote unquote, more adult, and that they don't need nurturing. So it's really a complex, I think, issue in terms of, you know, the Black girl magic hashtag. So how do we try to understand both of those sides to sort of try to bring a more complete picture about what's actually going on? I can take one
All
more,
right, Sheila. And this one, it's kind of related. So it starts off with, are there possible dangers of, for example, identifying Black girls as needing less nurturing than white girls, according to the Girl Interrupted report? And then, like, how creating divisions between Black and white femininity versus appreciating the grays of all sorts of different femininities?
Yeah, so number one, there's extreme dangers of identifying Black girls as needing less nurturing. But that's what the survey reported. That's what the survey said. So I think, you know, Jamila Blake and Dr. Epstein, I can't remember what school she's at, you know, they put out that report to challenge. I mean, I think there's recommendations actually for educators and teachers to challenge, to say, look, we've got to change this. We've got to think about this in different ways. So, you know, yes, let's nurture. Let's actually nurture Black girls, you know, in ways that support their development as children. So yes, absolutely, there are dangers. How do you create, Sheila, how do you create, what was the rest of that sentence? How do you create something?
Appreciating, like the grays of femininities versus creating a Black and white division.
Yeah, I'm not at all promoting Black and white division. What I'm suggesting is that for a very long time, white femininity has been the standard, and I think it continues to a certain extent to be the standard. So what I'm suggesting is, yes, let's actually celebrate the grays. Let's also make sure that we're celebrating Black girls' femininities and performance of whatever that looks like, their full personhood. So that's what I'm suggesting. I'm not suggesting a binary at all. I rarely work in binaries. So let me continue here. So now I'd like to introduce this math pedagogy approach that I'm still exploring. And so I just want to say right off the bat that this is not like a final thing, but these are ideas that I have been exploring based on my own empirical work and thinking about ideas from the literature. So Black feminist math pedagogy is really promoting an approach to teaching math in a way that basically identifies Black girls, their multiple identities, and figuring out how to nurture those and trying to promote what I have here, critical consciousness, math identities, and high levels of math achievement. So in other words, how do we create a Black girl that sits at the intersection of tight math chops, critically conscious, strong racial identity, gender identity, and also a robust math identity. She views herself as, I belong in this space. I see myself as a math learner, as an emerging mathematician, but I'm also proud of who I am. So, you know, I'm thinking that that intersection, if that's something that we could create, I feel like we would probably get more Black girls interested in mathematics, that perhaps they would persist a little bit longer in our, you know, what I call a figured math pipeline. And I like the word pathways better. But as you can see here on the slide, it really is rooted in Black feminist thought. And Black feminist thought is a set of ideas that really pushes centering Black women's experiences, their lived realities, their consciousness, how they come to know what they know through lived experiences. And she really thought about these ideas from like segregation. So Black women, you know, when we were segregated, Black women created these strong networks around employment, around education, around housing, because they weren't able to integrate. So, you know, all these Black women are together. They begin to share stories, share experiences, share coping mechanisms, how they were dealing with different things. And so Patricia Hill Collins has made a claim that that specific networking and positioning has given Black women a certain standpoint to really discuss oppression and things like that. And so Black feminist thought is really those sets of ideas. How do they do that? Paulo Freire's critical consciousness, you know, he talks about how the oppressor is not just gonna give up and give freedom to the oppressed, that the oppressed really have to take it. So how do we help Black girls think about sort of reclaiming math spaces for them, for themselves, to see themselves as, again, you know, having strong identities in these spaces? Black identity development is also, you know, there's a whole topology, if you will, where the last one is called internalization. So when African-American people reach the level of internalization, they don't explain their Blackness. It is all within its full humanness and all that it is, and they don't have to explain any of that. Like, how do we get Black girls to be in that space, really proud of who they are? And then this last one is about being rooted in rigorous student-centered and inclusive math learning. So Teresa Dunleavy, maybe some of you know her, she's a faculty member here as well. We have done two studies together, and the paper is called Moving Beyond Student-Centered Practices. And essentially, we're arguing that this particular math teacher, it was an Algebra 1 math teacher, had an enormous amount of Black girls in her course, like 17 out of 23 students were Black girls. And paper one really took up their voices. And we looked at how their views of themselves really shifted over an academic year when they came in saying, oh my God, you know, I flunked this class, you know, I'm terrible at math, to the end of the year saying things like, I can't wait to sign up for geometry. I've learned so much in this class. And so that paper is already published. If people are interested, I can give that to you. But then we went back, and what I will say is that those teachers utilized student-centered practices. And those student-centered practices, there were four, and we identify them in that paper. But they were things that we know are good instruction. So, you know, working together, you know, using manipulatives, lots of discourse, like all of the things that we know as math teachers that are great, right? However, we said, you know, any math teacher could do these things and still not get the results of what we actually saw in Miss Martin, that's a pseudonym, in Miss Martin's class. And so paper two, which we have right now under review, we went back to sort of think about how did Miss Martin actually talk about her Black girls? How did she frame her Black girls? And what we found out was that she framed their femininities as assets. So she positioned them as leaders. The other thing we found out is that Miss Martin was reading things like radical equations. I mean, she was reading, social justice texts and trying to understand, you know, African-American community. So she was bringing that knowledge to her classroom. So that paper hopefully will be published and you can read more about it. But those are some of the things that I'm trying to bring into this approach to really trying to support, you know, more Black girls loving, falling in love with mathematics, viewing themselves as mathematicians. And so I'm trying to explore, you know, these ideas. So the next slide is actually the diagram that I'm playing around with. Again, it's not final. So I have centered the Black girls in the middle, and I have tried to include, this is not a full list, but I have tried to include some of the identities that we as teachers, you know, need to be thinking about. So how do you get to know, for example, who your Black girl is, you know, so that you can, you know, then figure out, okay, how do I take these things that I know about her to integrate them in ways that gives her not just access to mathematics, but helps her to view herself as a math person. So this notion of identity. So I'll just start at the top, high quality math instruction. So if you're a math teacher and you care about these things, teaching Black girls argumentation, reasoning, discourse, problem solving, group work, these are things, of course, that we see in our Common Core standards, some of the, you know, mathematical standards for mathematical practices. So these are epistemic practices, skills that she can use regardless if you are teaching her fractions or the limit theorem and calculus or whatever it is that you're teaching her. These are skills that are transferable, of course, beyond math, but these are excellent skills and practices that she would need to be able to feel strong about her math content. To the right, we have this notion of robust math identities. She is able to resist people. So that means her peers, perhaps family members, perhaps teachers, counselors, whatever. She's able to resist people, ideas, attitudes that suggest she does not belong. So how do we engage her in our math classrooms in ways that helps her, again, to see herself as a math person? What kind of opportunities, you know, do we need to, you know, give her while we are, you know, doing instruction? At the bottom, we have transformative or radical academic and social integration. And I have discussed this a little bit, but, what is his name? Edmund is at Teachers College. He wrote a book called Pedagogy for White Folks. I can't remember the exact title, but it's something about pedagogy for white folks and then the rest of you as well. But he talks about this idea of how do we actually bring trauma and healing into the classroom? And I'm expanding that to think about the math classroom. You know, we ask our students when we come in, you know, we got five preps, Okay. And I've been there where you're exhausted and you feel like you don't have time to, you know, really get to know students at a deep level. But some students bring trauma, you know, things that go on in their lives outside of school. And we generally are asking students to leave those identities, leave those experiences at the door. But he's really asking us to allow some of that to actually come into the classroom to provide some opportunities for kids to actually heal. And I'm suggesting that I think that we can think innovatively and creatively about how to do those same things in a math classroom around, you know, math ideas and providing, you know, more rich experiences. And then the last bubble is critical consciousness. How do we help her find her voice to name the inequities and promote the use of math as a tool for understanding these inequities? So again, you know, how do we help her see mathematics, the value of mathematics beyond our classrooms, beyond the textbook, beyond, you know, what they are experiencing in schools? How do we help her to see how mathematics can be super powerful in helping us to understand different inequities or just social problems, period, for her to help her find her voice. So I am going to pause. I'm gonna make this small. And I would like to ask if there are questions before we go in to try to think about an example together.
So one question is, how does this schema evolve for students who already have developed a belief, for example, that she doesn't belong in math, or beliefs as math is like something like for rigid individuals who are geniuses?
How does it evolve for
students who maybe already have developed a belief that math is not where she belongs?
Yeah, you know, it's challenging. When I was in the classroom, I would spend sometimes the entire year essentially trying to crack that and disrupt that sort of position that my kids came into my class with. So I would say things like, how do you know you're not smart? Did someone tell you that? Like, you know, what kind of evidence are you bringing to this conclusion? And so, you know, I was asking my kids to think about math. What do they love about math? What do they hate about math? Can they talk to me about, you know, what makes it easy? What makes it hard? They would do math autobiographies because I really was trying to get at how do I help them develop and fall in love. I use that word because that's really what I'm trying to do, is help Black girls, young Black girls, fall in love with our discipline. So it's difficult. So to answer that question, it's difficult, but there are things that I think you can try and you have to be committed. And part of that is having lots of conversations with these young Black girls to get into their heads about how they came to that decision. And what you will find is that a lot of them have just had negative experiences prior to your classroom. So, you know, you're a new, innovative, you know, teacher. You care about social justice. You care about these things. And then, you know, you're sort of greeted with, you know, blank stares or, you know, like you said, I'm not good at math. And so it takes some time to sort of put a little wedge in those ideas, but it's definitely not easy.
All right. And then the next question is, how can we promote greater participation among Black girls in mathematics without further valorizing the mathematics itself? The domain tends to be oppressive in many respects. And so what needs to change about mathematics in relation to Black girls, about the mathematics?
So I think that's a question that I think about a lot. Because I feel, at least here in the United States, that changing the actual content, so for example, the scope and sequence of what gets learned in our classes, or even in higher ed when we major in math or, you know, get a master's in math, whatever, that is really, really difficult to change. It's kind of the position that I take on standardized testing. I am a believer that those tests are biased all day long. However, it's not a fight that I take up because I just don't believe that they will ever be removed. So I've been sort of exploring this same notion, like, you know, what needs to change about the actual mathematics, the content itself. I just don't think that that ever will. So I'm trying to figure out, how do we think about structures? So things like tracking, things like, you know, instruction pedagogy. How do we think about structures, and how do we think about the level of the student around identities in order to help them get access? Now, the other important thing to note about my work is that I'm not saying how do we make Black girls, turn them into assimilated students and profile of students that we understand is a math person. I'm saying, how does she bring her whole self of who she is in that space and still reclaims and takes ownership of that space? So it's not about assimilating. It is very much about understanding who she is, her personhood, you know, to be in this space. So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but I'm not quite sure that teaching her a different type of mathematics, that's not what I'm promoting at all. And then in terms of like the actual math, does that need to change? It's kind of a fight that I'm not, you know, that I haven't really taken up. I'm trying to look at how can we change the structures and some of the processes, the way that we teach math, and then also the way that we exclude certain students in that space. How do we address that? So Sheila, maybe one more question before we
actually answered all the questions.
Awesome.
We're good. If you want to go ahead.
Okay. So here's a scenario that you can read to yourself. And let me just tell you that there are two questions that I would like to engage, but you can choose one. You don't have to answer both. What would you do to support Grace in your math class using different ideas from Black feminist math pedagogies? And how do you think Grace is experiencing your trigonometry class? So this case study is about a trig class. So you have a Black non-binary student named Grace in your course. She's a senior, or they are a senior, while most of the other students are advanced sophomore. Grace is flamboyant and wears big earrings, but also wears traditional male clothing. Grace is in your course because they want to apply to college to study engineering and enjoy thinking about how things work together. Grace is quiet, never gives the teacher a difficult time. Therefore, Grace flies under the radar as it relates to their grade, which is around a C average. Grace does comply and works in groups, you know, when asked by the math teacher, but there are dominant white, Asian, and Black males in this class that never give space for anyone else to contribute. this really bothers Grace, but they never say a word. And one of the reasons why they never say a word is because in some previous math courses, they've been accused of challenging the teacher's authority and being viewed as disrespectful. They yelled at a teacher one time after several attempts to try to explain that they were not getting the opportunity to talk in a small group where they were, you know, working together. Some students make it known through their looks and implicit comments that they perceive Grace as weird, and the teacher does nothing to stop these students. The truth is that Grace plays chess outside of class, has a super supportive family, has gone on 3 college tours, and really enjoys talking about trigonometric ideas. So this is a situation that we see in our classes in 2017. So I wanted you all to think about the pedagogical approach and to sort of engage with these two questions. How do you think Grace is experiencing the class? What would you do? And again, there are no right or wrong answers. We're exploring this together. So if we would like to, Sheila, facilitate that, that'd be great.
Sure. So if everyone wants to take like a few minutes to kind of process and then pick one of the two questions. So either how did you think Grace was experiencing your trig class? Or what would you do to support Grace? And then kind of type your ideas into the chat. So we'll give you a couple minutes to kind of think about that and then put your thoughts down. Thank you. All right. So I see lots of people talking about trying to build a relationship with grace. And then also maybe changing up, how can you change up the groups to maybe give grace different opportunities in the group? And then maybe trying to find a way to position Grace as a leader, maybe giving Grace like different tasks or something to give them something to do.
Comes outside of the existing perception. To verbalize ideas. I have seen that down on paper. Okay. Okay. So I'm wondering if when people talk about building relationships or trying to find out more about her, what part of the framework do you see that addressing? Let's see here. Oops. So I'm just going to grab a hold of Mary's comment. Set up ways that you as a teacher keep track of who is speaking, presenting, and make sure each person has a chance to speak. So Mary, I'm curious to know what, because that's a, I think that's a really good idea. I'm just curious to know what part of the framework are you thinking that that would be connected to? Is that, I'll be quiet. I'll let you type. Hopefully you're still there. Okay. Mary might be gone. Oh, okay. I think it shows up in high quality instruction. Okay, great. And also in critical consciousness. Yeah. So this notion of trying to help her find her voice, to view herself as a contributing member, you know, to the class. How would you, you know, deal with the dominance of certain students that are in the class? Because it's one thing to, I think, help Grace feel like they do have a voice, but it's another to not address, you know, sort of the dominance, which I would, you know, parallel to being like a structural force, like dominant voices rising in math classes is something that happens all the time. That sometimes as teachers, we pick up on, sometimes we don't. Sometimes even when we do, we rarely, well, I won't say we rarely, but some teachers don't address it. And so you have the same students, which usually emerge as, you know, white males or maybe Asian males, in the classroom. And so their voices are strong. And so those kinds of messages can be implicit for other students. And since we're talking about Black girls, to then say, well, wow, you know, I guess I don't have anything to say because I'm rarely called upon. I'm rarely viewed as a contributor in my classroom, both by my teacher and by my peers. Let's see. I was not referring to the actual content.
I should have said the structure of math education. We have good evidence that it is oppressive. So what are we asking Black girls to participate in? It seems that structure of mathematics education needs to change, yes. Otherwise, the invitation to participate is an invitation to participate in an oppressive space. Participation in this case might further marginalize Black girls and entrench even more mathematics education as an oppressive space. I mean, I think this is an excellent point that mathematics education, the structure of mathematics education does need to change. So part of it is, you know, you've got Jeannie Oak's work, 30 years of research that talks about the bad things in terms of tracking. And then you have, you know, folks that, is it Elizabeth Cohen, like complex instruction, like how do you make sure that you're producing, you know, tests that are, that requires that every child participate. But again, you know, those can be student centers and those can be powerful, but they can still not be inclusive. And you can still come to, Black girls can still not see themselves in those spaces. So there's a lot, there's work that has to be done, I think, on the side of the teacher to really, you know, help her see that this is a space that she can thrive in. But I think this is a really good point that you raise here. Let's see here. I wonder how I know that Grace loves trig and trig ideas if they rarely have a chance to speak up in class. Yeah, I'm saying that in this scenario that I made up, that actually you don't know that. I'm saying that I'm suggesting that that Grace does love trig ideas because outside of the classroom, they have conversations, you know, with other students. So this is something that, you know, the teacher doesn't know. Do they demonstrate really strong written work that I can highlight anonymously at first, maybe, so it doesn't feel like I'm suddenly shining a perhaps undesired spotlight on them? So I'm looking at the time, it's 8:58. I just wanna say that these are things that have to be done at the very beginning of class, at the beginning of the school year, and they have to be, you know, consistently tried and consistently implemented every day. This is not something that you pick up like in March. You would have to begin the beginning of a class. So it's 8:59, and I know I heard Sheila come on, and I wanna make sure that I honor and stop when I'm supposed to stop. Thank you everyone for showing up. And I hope that we've all learned something and we can continue the conversation. Thank you.
Yes. And the room that we're actually in will stay open for about another, I think it's about an hour. So if you are having a conversation in the chat you want to continue, feel free to continue it. I'm going to stop the recording. The whole webinar will be probably posted about, usually takes about 24 hours. So if